Hello and welcome to the Produce Retail Podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Nickel, and I'm delighted to have as our guest today, Claudia St. John. Claudia is the founder and CEO of the Workplace Advisors, which is a consulting, recruiting, and training firm. She's also an author and keynote speaker, and I actually got to see Claudia speak back in 2021 at the Southeast Produce Council's Southern Innovations event. And she told a story that really vividly illustrated the value of career pathing. And I found it so compelling that honestly, I really kind of haven't stopped thinking about it since then, almost 3 years ago now. And on career pathing, as regular listeners might know, I recently finished up the first ever State of the Produce Manager report, and career pathing was a topic we explored. And I was really looking to understand what produce managers know about the opportunities available to them, what interests do they have in learning more, what communication is happening about those opportunities from their companies, all those sorts of things. And what I found in this survey that informed the report was that produce managers who had at least some inclination of, you know, opportunities down the line of a career path really had higher job satisfaction across the board on would they recommend their job, how much do they enjoy their work, how long do they plan to stay, all those sorts of things. And so I really wanted to kind of bounce some of those things off of a true expert on this topic. And that brings us back to Claudia. So Claudia, thanks so much for bearing with me while I connected all those dots, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Ashley. I'm absolutely delighted to be here, and I'm excited to be talking to folks in the produce industry again, and that's exciting to me, and I love this topic. So I'm excited to have the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. And I like to tell stories, or you will soon if you don't know that already, Claudia. And so if you don't mind, if you could recount that story that you told way back in 2021, the one that really captured my attention, it was about a janitorial company that had a turnover problem.
Yes. So the story is captured in a wonderful book. And I encourage every business, anybody who's managing people to read this book. And the book is called oh my gosh, hold on for one second. It's right behind me and it's in purple, so I should be able to see it. Here it is. The Dream Manager. So it's a Dream Manager by an author named Matthew Kelly. But I actually know this company. I don't know the author, but I know this company. So the story in this company is that in the janitorial sector, the typical turnover rate is between 200 and 400%. So that means to maintain a stable workforce, you have to hire your entire workforce over 2 to 4 times in order to keep constant a number, you know, the employees that you have. And that's devastating and incredibly expensive. And it also happens in a lot of retail environments as well. When you have opportunities to do other things in other places, that turnover happens. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners, if they haven't looked at their turnover rate, it's a very important, the retention rate and the turnover rate, because that really tells a story. It can tell a story of where that turnover is happening, in what department, right? But also under what supervisors and what managers. But the story here was that they had a turnover rate of 400%, and they ended up putting in just a very simple program, which is asking employees what their dreams were. And those dreams could range from, you know, I want to go up the career ladder, but most of them were, I want to learn English. I want to become a citizen. I want to buy a home. I want to be able to educate my children. Things that were just well outside the scope of the workplace. But the act of listening and the act of saying, what are your dreams? And then how do we hold you accountable and help you find the resources to accomplish those dreams? It didn't require any money from the business. It just required the act of somebody listening and helping them map out how to accomplish those goals. And after having done so, they reduced their turnover rate to under 100%, which in janitorial sectors is massive. But it also created this connection where people stayed. Their retention rates went out of, you know, way off the charts of what they had been. And so I think it's a wonderful lesson of saying, this doesn't have to be your forever home, but while you're here, we want you to be the best you, and we want to support you in your dreams and where you're going. And career pathing is a huge piece of that story. So I'm delighted that you brought that back up again, because I've always found it inspiring. And The Dream Manager is a wonderful book just to sort of create the framework. You don't have to hire a consultant to do that. You just need to listen to what your employees are wanting in their life. And it's going to vary by employee, but the act of listening itself is huge.
Well, and I love that you brought up, Claudia, that when they asked those questions, it wasn't just about what do you want from work, because I think that's an important part of understanding, like, if you want to be an employer of choice, right, is kind of see the whole person, which for a long time, there've been a little more, you know, clear lines around that. But absolutely. I think people probably expect something a little bit different now.
Well, and I think now is the operative word in what you just said, because when we look at the data, we see that the labor market is incredibly tight. It's what pulled us out of having a recession, because there just aren't enough workers. And if businesses want to grow, they're going to have to figure out a way to do something different, whether it's doing more with fewer people or just really focusing on retaining the, you know, we spend so much time on hiring, but what are you doing to really keep them there, keep them engaged, keep them wanting to stay with you as an employer of choice, whether that's your professional designation, whether you have that symbol on your materials and accomplished that, or just have a commitment and being intentional around saying, we need you. You are our most important asset. And now we're going to pay attention in a way that maybe we haven't had to before, because there was always someone to replace, right? There was the churn and burn of employees happened because there was a pool of potential candidates. But when we look at the unemployment rate, and I get asked this question all the time, like literally I was asked it last week, where did they all go? Where are all the employees? When are they going to come back? Well, if unemployment is currently at 3.7% and full employment is 4.2%, we're already well past full employment. They're all there already. So if we're not having enough babies, and I leave that to all of you millennials and future Gen Z moms and dads, if we're not having enough babies to replace the outgoing baby boomers, and I read that something like 11 million baby boomers turn 60 every day right now. And we don't have enough people to replace those. We really need to value the employees that we do have. And businesses that do that will win in that game all day long.
Well, and when you mention replacing those folks retiring, that's literally just talking about a physical body in that spot, not to even mention institutional knowledge, which is probably another great opportunity to work into career pathing.
Exactly. The other thing, just to sort of frame this conversation that I think is a wonderful evaluation, which is McKinsey does these workplace studies all the time. And they have been studying over and over again, what do workers want? And especially during like the Great Recession, everybody's like, where are they all going and why? Why are they going? And we know that they have about five things that they really care about. First of all, they want their work to matter. They want there to be meaning. And by meaning, that means we want to care about the people that we're serving. We want to care about the people that we're working with. We want to know that we're in a place where our values are in alignment with the company itself, and that there is a higher purpose, right? So when I read your survey, having a clean store, having produce, being able to connect with customers and explain all of the different, you know, produce that's available and how it can be used, seasonal vegetables, sustainably harvested, whatever it is, that creates meaning. So I think there's a lot of that can happen. They want flexibility. And I know that's hard because we've got schedules, but people want that family life balance. We know that from COVID, that was a wake up call for a lot of us. They want there to be an acknowledgement of their own wellness and well-being. And a lot of that is just, you know, mental health. A lot of that is just emotional intelligence. Like, how are you? They definitely want adequate compensation. So they don't necessarily want the best money out there. If they want the best money out there, you know, you can be chasing that forever. Mm-hmm. But the thing that they want, and especially this younger generation coming in, Gen Z, they want to know what their opportunities for growth are. They want to know that you as a company have a plan for them, whatever that is. So this conversation about career pathing is right up there on the number five list from McKinsey. So kudos to you, Ashley, for really prioritizing it and for having this podcast.
Well, I appreciate that, Claudia. And that's good to know. And as we talked a bit about, but before I hit record here, it's a lot of the things that came through in the report, I think a lot of this seems intuitive, but I also know it's easier said than done in a lot of ways.
But not rocket science. It's not rocket science. You can do this. Anybody listening can do this. It's a very simple process. So I'm excited to share that.
Yeah. Well, and maybe now that we've introduced for a while, maybe now is a good time to bring in sort of those basic definitions. What is career pathing? And maybe are there definitions that sometimes get thrown around for career pathing that aren't so spot on?
Well, I think there probably are a lot of definitions for career pathing. And as an HR professional, I know we have a lot of terms of art and we have a lot of processes. And there's a whole discipline within HR around career pathing. But at its basis, you look at somebody who comes in as a newbie and has absolutely no experience. What are the things that they need to accomplish, that they need to learn in order to get to the next level, the next rung on the ladder? And some of that might be just understanding what already exists, but some of it may be creating the opportunity to grow in different professional aspects as they grow up that ladder. And I'll give a perfect example. So one of our clients, they are a pension benefit administrator. So these are the people that help navigate pensions and are the record keeper for businesses that have 401ks or other pension programs. They're relatively flat organizations. You know, you have a TPA, which is a third party administrator, and then you might have an account supervisor, and then you got the president. These businesses tend to have maybe 20 employees. So they're flat. These are flat organizations. So how do you career path in an environment where, I mean, I look around and I'm two seats away from the owner. Is there a room for me? And it really is, tell me what I need to learn and how I need to grow in my current role in order to get to the next level. And that can be many things. It's, do you need to have some training? Do you need a certification? Is there an education element to it? And if, as you do these, you will be able to take on more clients. You'll get more money. You'll have more opportunity. Or maybe I don't want that career path. I want to be a supervisor and trainer. And there were a lot of comments in your survey about people loving to train and develop people. But we don't train our frontline supervisors. We train them in like how to do the thing. But we don't do a lot of training around how do you listen with empathy? How do you navigate conflict? How do you assess your own and somebody else's emotional intelligence? And how do you help people grow in that way? So even at the very basic level, even in the flattest organization, there are ways to say, and I always start with the very, very entry level person, what do they need to accomplish in order to grow and develop the skill sets in order you go from the beginning to the very top? What are those pieces and how do you get there? And if your organization, and I think in this industry, they have room, but if you're in such a flat organization as this one, then you don't necessarily have a new seat. You don't necessarily have a new title. You're just developing your skill set. And if in the end there's not enough room and they leave you, at least you know that you developed them and that's your commitment. And you will be much more likely to be able to find somebody to come in and nurture and grow because you'll figure it out how to do it.
Well, and it's interesting, Claudia, that you mentioned really sort of the leadership and the people management part of things, because that was something else we kind of looked at in the survey and the report was, you know, it's a role with manager in the title, but a lot of these folks, there's so many other elements of the job. There's the business side and inventory and ordering and customer service and the physical merchandising and all those different things. You can be amazing at that and get promoted and not necessarily have had experience or training in managing a team and leading people. And like you said, conflict and some of these things.
Right. Well, and we see that over and over and over and over again. I was just talking to a car wash client, was a couple of weeks ago, and they were having such a hard time because their supervisors were, they had specific supervisors who had way more turnover than others. And I said, but as a supervisor, they were great at doing whatever they were doing that got them promoted, but that and managing people, those are not the same skill sets.
Yeah.
They're just absolutely not the same skill sets. And we don't spend enough time training our supervisors and managers around, and this I'm evangelical about this, around giving positive feedback, right? We're really good at time and attendance and attire, and you did this wrong and you showed up late and you didn't put this where that was supposed to go and you didn't clean that the way we wanted that cleaned. But we spend no time saying you did that and put it where it needed to go and cleaned exactly the way we wanted it. Thank you. That makes us able to create a space where our customers know they're getting quality, know that it's a healthy place, know that the food that they're eating is healthy, and you made that happen. We don't spend enough time doing that. So that's a huge piece of the puzzle, that just having that skill set. And the other thing I'll say, Ashley, on that, and everybody knows this, literally everybody listening to this knows this, you are only as strong as your weakest link. And what we know is that employees don't quit their jobs. They quit their supervisors. They quit the people that they're working for because they don't feel heard. They don't feel seen. They don't see opportunity. And that's why they leave. And we do not spend enough time training our frontline supervisors and managers on precisely that thing. So this is great content. And I think it's critical in healthy workplaces. I really do, regardless of the industry.
Well, and Claudia, I think that's such an excellent point. And honestly, something I had not thought about before, because I was thinking, well, man, you got manager in the title. You should probably have some training in management, right? But you're so right. As we consider retention more broadly, not just for the managers to keep them around and give them opportunities to move up, or like you said, even just grow and develop within that same role, but everybody else who's working for them, you can make so many jobs and people better and happier and stay longer when you invest in that leadership training, probably at many different levels, but certainly for the folks who are influencing where you probably have the most churn, which is that, you know, entry-level associate kind of level.
And typically the people that are managing that frontline new associate, brand new employee, those supervisors tend not to be the managers, because the supervisors are reporting to the managers and the managers are managing the supervisors. But really the supervisors are the weakest link in a typical chain, in typical organizations.
Well, and like you said, that kind of makes sense, right? Because they're promoted on things other than the people management and the leadership. And so unless there's a real concrete plan in place to help add to that skill set. Cause I think a lot of this is not intuitive, right? Like I don't manage a team. I would want training on how do you get through conflict, right? Or how do you navigate sensitive subjects? How do you talk about schedule and family dynamics in a way that is sensitive, but you still hold the line on, well, you know, this is what we need from you in this role. And I mean, that's not easy. That doesn't necessarily come naturally.
I think it's the hardest job out there because you're managing a human. Mm-hmm. And alas, we're given our own free will and we're going to exercise it. And I think the other thing is I equate these to soft skills. I think career pathing is not a soft skill. That's something very organizational and intentional that businesses have to do. But the soft skill can be something as simple as reading a mood, right? So people show up at work with their mood that may be affected by what's at home, but they bring it to work. Mm-hmm. So what do you do when you read a mood? And how able are you to say, hey, you okay? need to take some time? Like, is there anything I can do to help? Do you want to talk? We need to get these things done, and you're amazing at it, and you did those things amazingly last week. Are you in the right frame of mind? Do you want to have a conversation? I mean, those are skills that, and I think a lot of supervisors feel like, I got stuff to do.
Yeah.
I just need you to do your job. I'm paying you. You just got to do your job. And if you have that attitude, there will be somebody who will say, you need to do your job and I'm paying you, but I also care. How are you? That's where you will lose your employees. If you don't have that nurturing relationship with them.
Well, and it sounds like there's got to be a cultural element here where there's buy-in from, you know, leadership all the way at the top, that's like, hey, I know our labor budgets are constrained and we've trimmed as much of the fat as possible and all those kind of things, but your people are still important. And so do take time to have conversations with them. Don't let that get squeezed out, because like you said, it's a competitive market. You know, if you're an employer, you're competing for your employees. And I don't think it's always looked at that way.
Oh, and it's 1,000% that way. That you're competing against not only all of your own peers, right? Competitive peers in your geographic area, but everybody else. Like, you're competing against McDonald's and Burger King and Target and Amazon. And like, you're competing, you're all competing for the same limited resource of human capital that exists in that area. So the other thing about leadership, I will say, telling them that they need to care. Well, certainly that's important, but you need to show them what that looks like. And there's this ancient proverb, which is that the fish rots from the head down. And as grocers, you know that, right?
Yeah.
So if you are not showing up as a leader, as the head of the top guy, the top woman in that role, if you're showing up with a rotten fish head, it's hard to expect anybody else to show up any differently. So you need to show them by delivering that empathy to your supervisors. What are you struggling with? Acknowledging that managing people is hard. What are their struggles? How do I, you know, when I think about therapists have therapists, mm-hmm. right? They need them, because sometimes it's like, how do I get out of this situation? I feel stuck in my particular situation. Being the leader that can say, how's it going? I know you've got Sue, and I know Sue is tough to work with, tough to inspire. How's that working out for you? How can I help you? Mm-hmm. Those are the leaders. That's not just telling them, that's also showing them.
Well, and that makes so much sense, because I think about, probably, now this is a little guesswork on my part, but just based on my observations over the years, you know, the higher up the ladder you get those hard charging, you know, very performance oriented individuals, and they don't typically get cut a lot of slack from their bosses, and that may not be having those sorts of conversations. So it may not necessarily be in their mind to have those sorts of conversations with the folks that they're managing, right? So that's where I think, like you said, to have sort of the whole company bought in from the top, to me is something that is so huge here. Because, you know, if we say, hey, this matters for our frontline associates, because that's where all the turnover is, but Joe, you who look over 25 stores, like, I know your kid's sick, but like, this has to get done. You know,
yeah.
it's hard to have it if it's not consistent, I would imagine.
It is. And here's the thing, life happens, right? I mean, we have other stuff we have to do, and we have other stuff we have to work on. But I've been delivering this keynote for about a year and a half now, and it's usually to business leaders, like the head of the pyramid, right? I'm talking to them, and I'm saying, your problem is labor. You're struggling with not having enough workers. And if I had $1 to spend of your money, if I had $1 to spend, it would be on developing the soft skills of your supervisors. That's the most important. And not just developing them, but understanding we have to navigate this, and it's not going away. We're going to be in this situation for the next 10 years. I mean, barring a lot of millennials having a lot of babies, but we still have to wait for them to grow up, and we don't see that happening. I think that this has to be a priority for business leaders, because otherwise you're just going to be lucky if somebody shows up, like we saw in your survey. People are like, I love training and developing employees. Really? That's awesome, but that's hard work. I'm amazed that people are really excited about that, unless they feel comfortable, unless they know that whatever my employees show up with, I'm there for them and I'm there to handle that. Those are the people who love developing employees, because those are the ones who actually are developing employees. They're actually seeing that success. And that's inspiring. That's exciting.
Well, and you mentioned the long-term implications of this whole area. And so I was thinking about this and I thought, well, if you're having this conversation with the CEO and you're talking about, you know, the role of employees and our overall strategy for our customer experience, for all these different things, your CFO is probably the one who says, so, well, what's the timeline on our ROI here for this money that we're investing in our team? Well, how do you approach that element?
I would ask the CFO to take a look at your retention and your turnover data and to evaluate how much it costs you in overtime, how much it costs you to post that position, how much it costs you to train those employees, how much it costs you to pay out, you know, all of the unused PT. Like, typically it's 1.5 to 2 times that person's salary every time they turn over. Now, in this space at lower levels, it may be half time, but still you multiply that by whatever your turnover rate is, your CFO is going to say, yeah, I get it. We need to invest in some of these things, because the ROI is clear. The ROI is easy to calculate. You just look at the cost of that turnover, both with tangible and intangible costs, and developing and training and loving on your employees is always going to win you financially. And also culturally, right? If you care, you have a culture that really, really matters. And I do think that this career pathing is a great aspect of it also, because it goes hand in hand with those soft skills, because it gives you the opportunity, like the dream manager we were talking about, to talk about what do you want? Like, and a lot of employees just want to stay where they are. Like, don't make me a supervisor. Don't make me do that. I am able to go and do my work and get home and live my life and be there for my kids and be there to go fishing and sailing or gardening or whatever those things are. Let me stay here. And that has to be okay too. You have to help people nurture their way up, but you also have to make it okay for the large percentage of people who don't necessarily want that responsibility.
I love that you mentioned that too, because as I was thinking about for grocery retailers in general, right? Like, what does it look like to be an employer of choice, to really have people be like, well, I could work over here at McDonald's, or I could work over here at, you know, regional grocer X. And that was something that occurred to me too, Claudia, is just the need for flexibility in maybe somebody is part-time and they never want to be full-time, or maybe they know that they only want to do this in the summers or during the school year when their kids are, or whatever that looks like. And I think that's part of the reason why structured career pathing makes so much sense, because just by having the conversation, now you know how you can win each of these people one at a time, which may sound kind of overwhelming, but to your point, you're doing that anyway if you're having to bring new people in when they leave.
That's the name of the game. Yeah, that's totally the name of the game. It's interesting. So my best friend and his father, my best friend's grandfather was a grocer, and they have a grocery store in Westchester where they live, and they know everybody by name, and everybody that has been there for years, like decades.
Wow.
And my friend lost his mother a year ago, and they got bouquets from the employees. They show up and they're like, they call them on the phone and they say, we just got some great prime whatever meat. I don't really know my stuff, but like, come in and get it. It's on sale right now. But like, they text each other. They're in relationship with each other, and they've been there forever because they are a community. And the employees that work together, satisfying those clients, those customers, they are a family. And they're like an extension of the family. This guy who ended up heading up the meat department, which is where they apparently spent a lot of time, he said, you know, I have a text from your mother. And again, she passed about a year or so ago. And the text was just saying, hey, if I can ever do anything for you, I know that your wife needs this medical device. And if I can help you with it. And he literally showed my boyfriend a text from his own mother to the head of the meat department, to the meat manager. These are real relationships, and those are stories that every single one of your listeners has, because they are in community with their own. That is culture, and that matters. And if it's just about time and attendance and scheduling, and here's my square hole, and you need to be a square peg or else you're not going to fit, you're missing out. And you're missing out the people that are actually creating community on your behalf.
Well, and to me, it just seems, and I'm sure there's research out there that probably validates this, I'm thinking, it seems pretty intuitive to me that the experience of your employees is going to have such a positive correlation with the experience of your customers. If your customers are happy, yeah, most things will take care of themselves, I think. If your customers are happy, your employees are happy. And so I know this is the age of efficiency and metrics and all those different things, that they certainly have a role. But man, I think, like you mentioned, some of the, and I don't like the term soft skills, because I think that makes it sound like optional, right?
But yeah, you're right. But you're
it's
right.
So critical. I think it's undervalued.
Absolutely. Well, the Gallup organization has been tracking employee engagement and workplace wellness for like 70 years.
Wow.
And what they know is that highly engaged employees who feel like they have a home, who feel like they have opportunities to learn and grow, who feel like somebody truly cares about them as a person on the job, you do. You have less turnover. You have less sick leave use. You have less shrinkage or theft. You have higher levels of productivity, and you have way higher customer engagement. I mean, it is, again, your CFO, you got to convince them. Well, there's data out there, and the Gallup organization is a great place to look. There, to your point, yeah, there's a lot of data proving that a happy employee is a happy customer, is a happy culture. It'll keep your CFO happy. That's always the job, right?
That's always
good.
We care
about the CFO more than anyone else. An engaged and happy employee will keep your CFO happy.
There you go. Well, and I was curious too, the importance of career pathing. I would say probably it's always been important, but now versus even 5 years ago, I've got to imagine it's through the roof.
Oh, absolutely. We know that this is what Generation Z wants. They are Generation Z, which is, they're currently around 25, 26 years old, and they go down to about 10 years old. So it's the population that, about half of them are already in the workplace. A lot of the high school kids that you've got working in grocery stores, you know, that they're Gen Zs. They're very different, and they're also very conservative, right? They want to know how they're going to make money, how they're going to save for the life that they want to have. They're very discerning, and if they don't think you care about them, they'll find somebody who does. They're very motivated by this. And one of the things that they want is, all right, I'm bagging groceries. What is it going to take for me to be able to stock shelves? What is it going to take for me to be able to manage produce? What is it going to take for me to be able to get into the departments that I care about? What is it going to take for me to be able to get from there to maybe management level? Is there a career here? Like, can you go and get Juan from the meat department, the director of the meat department? Can you bring him out and say, Juan has been here for 30 years. And you know where he started out? He started out over here, and now he's there. And these are the things. And you can speak to it anecdotally, of course. But if you could sit down and say, here are the places you can go. And here are the things that you need to demonstrate that we want to show you and teach you how to get there. And you can get there as fast or as slowly as your own capabilities and time permits. but we have a plan for you if you want to be with us. And there's, I would love for your listeners to call me to ask me how to develop a career path. And what I will tell them is you already have everything you need. All you have to do is look at your lowest level entry-level employee and look at the variety of senior level people that you have. How do they get from here to there? What are the learning objectives? What is the evidence that they've learned that? What comes with that? Maybe it's more flexibility. Maybe it's higher pay. Maybe it's a title. Whatever those things are, it's up to you to map out. And this is one of those things I say, you know, develop a spreadsheet, go pour yourself a cup of coffee on a Saturday morning and hang out on your sofa and just map it out. And you've got a career path that you can refine. Somebody might say, I don't want that path. I want this path. All right, well, here's how we get over there. Like, your ladders are going to go in different directions. They're all the rungs on the ladder, and they may lead to very different places, but all of that is okay for your employees.
Where would you start if you're looking at, I'm thinking in terms of career pathing and communicating that for people new to the organization or newer to the organization, and then more on the retention side, folks that have been with you for a while and maybe they want to stay in their spot, maybe they want to move up, but giving those folks opportunities to grow and to learn and to keep folks in addition to finding new folks.
I wouldn't start with the newbies. I would start with your existing employees, because that is retention. That's listening to the best asset you have, which are the people that are already there. You already got them. You know them. Where do they want to go? And they have a better perspective of the workplace because they can look at the range of people and places. And a lot of employees will say, I want to go over to that department, but I know that Steve's been there for 30 years and he's not going anywhere. So I'll never be able to do that. Well, maybe there's an opportunity to job share with Steve. Maybe there's an opportunity to cross train with Steve so that when he goes on vacation, you can cover. And that covering when employees are on vacation or putting in a voluntary sabbatical program, which I love. We can talk about that if you want to, but when somebody else is doing the job that somebody's been there for 30 years doing, you're going to see stuff. You're going to see there's a different way of doing that. Maybe not better, but different. And is that interesting? And is that something to listen to? You get a much better sense of really what's happening when you do have people training and supporting and covering for each other, cross training.
So you have piqued my curiosity about the voluntary sabbatical.
So I love this as an employee engagement and retention tool, which is after you've been here for 5 years, you get 6 weeks off. And we're going to pay you for that 6 weeks. No harm, no foul on the employer because they're just paying them. But we're going to give you 6 weeks off. You don't have to use your PTO and maybe we'll kick in $1,000 or whatever.
Wow.
You have to schedule it, right? We have to plan for it. You have to make sure somebody's cross-trained and able to help you support that. But that's something we will do for everybody. And when you roll it out, like, obviously you have to start with the people who've been there a long, long, long time, but then you're giving people opportunities to check those jobs out. And people that put in sabbatical programs, the employees love it because they're always excited. Who's going out on sabbatical this year? Where are you going? What are you doing? How are you going to spend that time? So exciting. But also institutionally, it gives you the opportunity to understand what's going on within your organizations and to kick the tires on different things. The people that have put voluntary sabbaticals in love them. They just love them.
That is fascinating. I have never heard of that. But for one, as an employer, you would think that gives you a huge competitive advantage, I would think.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You're here. Stay here for 5 years. You'll get 6 weeks off and a couple $1,000s, and you get to go wherever you want. And we're going to, and the other thing is the employees just love it. Like, they love to hear, where'd you go? What'd you do? You know, what was that like? Oh my gosh, I'm going to think about doing that. I'm thinking about going to Peru. Well, I'm thinking about staying home and remodeling my house or learning how to knit. I don't know, whatever it is, but yeah. They get the time. And how often do we get like 6 weeks off?
It's unheard of, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're, so my husband's an accountant. So the partners at the accounting firm, I think it's every 7 years they get a sabbatical, right? Or actually, I think the pastor of the church, I think, is the same every 7 years or every decade or something like that. They get a sabbatical. And for somebody who's not in one of those roles, it's like, wow, what would that be like to just have weeks to like jump on, you know, cleaning the house? I mean, I told you I'm a mom of 1-year-old twins. So, you know, that would be something on my list.
Get the house in order. I don't want you to spend your sabbatical cleaning your house. That's not my wish for you. My wish is for you to take those twins and head off in some fabulous adventure that does not involve cleaning or cooking. Don't do that. That's not how I want you to spend. I don't wish that for you.
But you know what I mean. Just the idea that, like, whoa, there's a break. Like there can be an extended break, even if it's years in between. Like, that's something that, yeah, I just think for retention, like, to understand what that can do for people, and theoretically it wouldn't even have to be 6 weeks, right? Somebody could say, we're going to give people a 2-week sabbatical. That would be like, whoa, you know?
And you can structure it in a way that, like, you can't take your PTO with it. It has to be planned in advance.
Yes.
But the thing is, your CFO is going to say, we're doing what? It doesn't add anything. I mean, if you don't give them any additional money, it's just their payroll's going to be the same. You do have the inconvenience of having somebody out, but we all have people that go out on workers' comp. We all have people who go out on maternity leave or, you know, have an injury. Like, we know how that happens. This is something that's planned and it does not cost anything more.
And I know we're over time already, but I'll ask you one more on the voluntary sabbatical. I don't know how long these programs have been in use, but what kind of impact have you seen on retention and on some of sort of the measurables that you can go back to the CFO with, say, hey, guess what? Our retention is up. Our turnover is down. These other costs are not here because we're doing this.
I would love to give that data to you. And that data exists.
Okay.
I just didn't know that I was going to wander into
the
realm. So I didn't research it before you on the podcast, but it's out there. Just Google voluntary sabbatical, workplace sabbaticals. There's a lot of literature out there. I mean, you know, you hear about it in academia, right? You hear about it in certain high level positions, but you can roll it. I have a, like I said, I have a third party, the woman who was asking me about career pathing for the third party administrator, the pension administrator, they have sabbaticals.
They love them. And that's a small team.
And there's only 20 of them, but they plan it in advance. So everybody then started when they rolled it out, it's like everybody, they maybe have 500 pension plans that they administer. Okay. So there's always somebody who's on backup for those. And there's certain very busy times. It's sort of like, you know, an accountant's not going to take time off during tax season, right?
Yes.
But there are, like with the high flows, there are low flows. And I'm sure it's like that in the grocery business as well. I mean, there's a consistency, but you know, right before Thanksgiving, nobody is taking time off. Nobody's taking time off during the holidays. Like everybody is just, you know, pushing it as hard as they can. But sometimes in the doldrums of summer or March or whatever, it's just whatever it is. Nothing exciting is happening. Give them time off. And the other thing I will say is you can look at your turnover rate. And I was talking to a dentist who's also a client of ours. And he said, you know, we, for some reason, everybody that has left us, they all seem to leave us in January and they seem to leave us in like April, May. And I don't know why. And I said, well, you don't necessarily have to know why, but that's a great time to plan an employee engagement, like do a retreat. Put in place an employee appreciation program, like make something exciting. Cause you know, January, it's after the holidays and everyone's like, you know, I need to be eating less and drinking less and doing all that stuff. And this is just terrible. And I hate my job and I quit. That's a good time to be like, let's jack it up. Let's save our holiday party for January, whatever it is. But there's so many stories you can tell yourself about the data that you already have within your organization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and like I said, I know we're over time, so we can end it here. But I was just thinking too about so many of the like the directors of produce and people that I've talked with who they started bagging groceries. They started as a clerk, and 30 years later, they're still there. Obviously, we see a lot less of that kind of tenure, I think, now and with younger generations. Doing things like that, I think, is what's going to be required if you really want to have people with institutional knowledge going forward past the baby boomer and that generation.
Absolutely. And we you look at those different generations, they want different things. So how do you create a home for them? And if you want to talk about career pathing, well, there's your exhibit A. That's career pathing.
Mm-hmm.
But what kept that employee there may not be the same things that are going to keep a Gen Z there.
Mm-hmm.
What do they want? Ask them, you know, ask them. And one of the things, I know we're not on this topic at all, but somebody asked me, what does Gen Z want when they talk about diversity and inclusion? And I said, you know, I have a little focus group. I got two of them myself. I have a 21 and a 23-year-old. So I have my own focus group. And they don't want there to be certain metrics that have to be met, or you met a quota or whatever. They just want all of their friends to feel like they belong, regardless of what, you know, what shape or form or color or whatever they show up as. They just, however many tattoos they have or whatever their issue is, whatever it is, they just want to know that people care about them and that they have a place that they can call their home. Mm-hmm. And the people that don't create a space for that or don't make them feel like they belong, those are the people you need to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people that don't, that have no space if you want to attract a Gen Z. So that's, I boil it all down to, is this a home and do you belong?
Yeah, that makes sense. Excellent. Well, Claudia, thank you so much. This has been a wonderful conversation. I know we could go for related topics for hours and hours
topics
on this.
But... I know. I like to talk about this a lot, obviously.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Thank you for giving me that opportunity.
Oh, absolutely my pleasure. Thank you again for taking the time. We'll thank our listeners as well. And I always tell folks, if you're learning from or otherwise enjoying the podcast, if you would rate and review, that does help me keep it going. Keep bringing in wonderful folks like Claudia to share their expertise, which I think we all just can learn so much from. And one more note, I have had a number of folks reach out to me with interest in viewing the full report. I did design it as a resource for retailers, so I've made it complimentary for folks on that side of the business. For suppliers who would like a copy, there is a nominal investment. Obviously, the better you understand your customer and their challenges, the better partner you can be. So there is value to this report for companies on the supply side as well. Please feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. It's Ashley Nickel. Nickel is N-I-C-K-L-E. Or my email is ashley@nickelgrowthstrategies.com. Thank you so much for listening. Aside from interest in the report, please let me know if there are topics that we aren't covering that you think we should be, or if there are some awesome people on the retail side you know who you would love to hear as guests. Send it all my way. I appreciate all your feedback. Thank you one more time, and I'll see you next week on the Produce Retail Podcast.